Now we come to what is called as a facilitation theory, also called as a humanistic theory. It was advocated by Carl Rogers, one of the best known psychologists in the US, who had made significant contributions to the field of adult education. Now what is this theory? Let's see. While maintaining that all human beings have a natural desire to learn, he identified two categories of learning. All human beings have got a natural desire to learn. There are two categories of learning according to this particular theory. Meaningless or cognitive learning, experiential applied knowledge which addresses the needs and the wants of the learner. One seems to be just dry learning, like the multiplication tables example given there. The other one will be performing a first aid on one's child. Now some people will say the second is always better, but the first is also an important part of the learning. First appears to be meaningless. It is cognitive learning, just, you know, by hearting multiplication tables or some alphabets or some words. That's one form of two types of categories of learning, right? Taking it further, according to Rogers, the role of the trainer is to facilitate the experiential learning, set a positive climate for learning, clarify the purpose of the learner, organize and make available learning resources, balance intellectual and emotional components of the learning. Intellectual is the inputs that you're giving, and the emotional is the way the person takes the inputs. Both have to be properly balanced. Sharing feelings and thoughts with learners, but not dominating. Now sharing feeling and thoughts, whose thoughts and feelings? The trainers. So when I take a training program, for example, I make it a point to tell them about my own experiences wherein I was in a similar situation and what happened to me and how I overcame that. When I do that, there's a reflection, the mirroring. They say, hey, he's gone through. So they start thinking, then they ask questions, then they start connecting. It becomes easier. Okay. Rogers suggests learning proceeds faster when the threat to the self is lowest. So don't be threatening to people. Don't try to teach them something. Facilitate. Give them possibility. Show them the path. Then they don't feel threatened. At the self-esteem level, they start learning. Significant learning takes place when the subject matter is relevant to the personal interest of the learner. Simple. Human beings have a natural eagerness to learn, although they may offer initial resistance. This is a very paradoxical statement. People think that people are resisting to learn. In my experience as a trainer for more than two decades, I have noticed that people want to learn, but they want to learn their way. And it is a role of a teacher or a facilitator to understand what way this person wants to learn. You have to discover it through dialogue, through calibration, etc. The most significant learning involves changing one's concept of oneself. This is a very, very challenging thing. If a person has got a very low self-concept that I am a no good or I am not worthy, people come with this self-concept. And these are the people, you'll be surprised if I tell you, they are all successful people in industry, but their self-concept is very low, not confident in spite of success. Everybody says you're successful, but you're not confident. So one of the significant learning is raise the self-esteem or the self-concept of the person. The moment you raise it, he will go to a different level. This is the most significant learning. This is something which is really, it's a beneficial for many people. The learner, the trainer, and also for the organization and for the society and the home to which the learner belongs. According to this theory, facilitator trainers are less protective of their constructs and beliefs rather than teachers. The facilitative trainer, that is a person like me, less protective of the constructs and the beliefs than other teachers. Constructs and beliefs means what? There are certain approaches. I use an approach. The approach may work, may not work. So I won't say that my construct is the best construct. Teachers or people who are into rigid thinking, they say, I know the best, you better listen to me. That is not facilitation. There you're trying to say that my way or the highway. So there are certain constructs and beliefs from where I operate my training, but I'm less protective. I don't say that that is the only best way. You could be coming out with new ways. They are more able to listen to learners, especially to their feelings, empathy. Inclined to pay as much attention to their relationship with learners as to the content of the course. It's very important that the facilitator connects with the participants. with the learners on a human one-on-one basis. Not to dilute the learning, not to make the learning diluted or become over-friendly, but to understand the emotions and the platform from where they are operating. Apt to accept feedback, both positive and negative, and use it constructively. They'll give you feedback. They may not be as knowledgeable about the topic, but they'll give you feedback that this is not good, this is okay. So take it and use it constructively. Okay. Learners are encouraged to take responsibility of their own learning by providing necessary inputs and motivation. So they start taking responsibility, they feel good about it, and then they start giving necessary inputs so that their learning enhances. They go through a certain module, they go back and they put into practice, then they come back and tell, okay, this is how it worked, this is how it's not working. So they're involved in the whole learning process. The most valuable learning is a process of self-evaluation leading to reflection and further course of action. Self-evaluation is very, very challenging because when you evaluate yourself, you must learn to be objective and not subjective. You can't be too lenient to yourself, neither can you be too harsh. You need a certain middle path. You must involve the learning process, not your emotions. But self-evaluation is one of the matured form of evaluation for a person. In the absence of not having anybody around you, self-evaluation is some skill which you need to develop. When you develop a self-evaluation skill, friends, what happens is you are in the path of becoming a leader. You're very clear about what you've done is okay or what you've done is not okay with respect to a certain goal. So you're doing self-evaluation and doing self-correction also in the bargain. Action learning is what we're taking next. In this approach, a small cooperative learning group is formed known as action learning sets. In this approach, through the process of actions and reflections of the actions of the learning progresses. So they are given some activity. They do that activity. Maybe one of the activities is, take some to a tower building exercise, something, give them some input, some resources, they make something, you watch them, and then you tell them, why did you do what you did? So there's a reflection. The sets meet regularly on real life issues of individual members with the aim of cross learning. The father of action learning, Reg Rivens, states that there can be no learning without action and no sober or deliberate action without learning. So they learn something, they create something, then you ask them why you created, then they'll give you the reasons. Then you tell them, can you make it better? So they keep on doing it better. And then they come out with a type of a thing which says that, okay, this is what I'm learning. So there's an action and thought both coming together. He sets an equation, L equal to P plus Q, where L is learning. P is program knowledge, which is a syllabus, if you can call it, traditional instruction, and Q is the questioning and insight. So learning is a combination of program knowledge, syllabus, and also your questioning. Today, what is happening is in classrooms especially, people are taking programming knowledge. They take all the textbooks, etc. from us, but they are not questioning us. The questioning insight is lacking in many students, unfortunately. He also stated that action learning is his idea for finding solution for problems that do not have a right answer. There are many things in life where you do not have a right answer. So form a group of people, put them into this particular mode, then you'll get an answer which is viable. Action learning groups approaches are in the modern days popular as a T groups. They're called a T group training and team building. It's a T group means it's a group of people who are coming together with an activity and debriefing and then further activity. Problem-based learning. Problem-based learning is a concept borrowed from the medical field. It is an instructional strategy in which trainees working groups take responsibility for solving real-world problems. The instructor, instead of lecturing or leading a discussion, creates a hypothetical scenario, a problem for the trainees, and as an observer and advisor watches the trainees work out a solution. This is more about scenario or case study learning. Trainees assume major responsibility for their instruction and learning and explore the situation they have been given by building hypotheses and assumptions. What if this happens this way? What if that happens this way? So you give them a situation and tell them, look, how will you solve it? As a team, they do brainstorming. They go through a lot of, reading this and that and whatnot. They may even build a model. Then you question them. Exploration is accomplished by activating trainees' prior knowledge, illustrating similarity of context and applied and application. So start exploring, asking them questions. What if you did it this way? If you do it like what he did, what will happen to you, etc., etc. It's basically interactive brainstorming that happens. And during investigation inquiry, training increases their knowledge and understanding concepts of work. Instructors should ensure that the trainees do not lose sight of the problem by involving them in the active responses, various simulations and immediate feedbacks. Such a type of a problem-based learning can go haywire if you don't keep it on a tight leash. You have to ensure that the problem is still, they are still with the problem and not going haywire. See, when you do a creative exercise, there's a tendency that people may go haywire into a different regime altogether. So you have to bring them back. Okay? Problem-based learning is beneficial because it provides opportunities to create finished products. It focuses you towards solving a problem to the end, in short. These created products optimize both retrieval memory and appropriate use of the knowledge that would be used for further future professional practices. Okay? Now we come to project-based learning. Project-based learning is a strategy that helps trainees apply theoretical content to authentic problems that require critical thinking and increase trainee responsibility for learning. Project-based learning is a strategy that helps trainees apply theoretical content to the authentic problems that require critical thinking and increase training responsibility for learning. Trainees are presented with an authentic problem, a real problem, and introduced to a wide range of tools whereby a solution is achieved via an actual project. Here is a problem. What is it that you want? Tell me. I'll give you this. I'll give you that. I'll give you manpower. Everything I'll give you. Now tell me, how are you going to do it? The project is a culmination of the learning process where the solution is an authentic situation where a solution to an authentic situation is brought about. With the teacher acting as an advisor, facilitator and service provider, trainees guide the focus of their exploration and take ownership of the learning experience. Project-based learning promotes opportunities for trainees to choose their area of interest within the content framework and journey into deeper levels of study. You know, sometimes live projects are given to management trainees. There they go through project-based learning. A live project, a company, they join a company for say 8 weeks or something. And the company says that let you take a live project. Live project means something which is a part of the commercial operations of the company. Take this project and show me something. They want some end results to come. That's a project-based learning. So a team of summer trainees are put into that. And then they go through this. And then you find that those people are learning something overall. So based upon the constructivist approach, they try to construct things. Project-based learning allows the trainees to chart their educational exploration while providing access to numerous resources. And they know that I can use this input, I can use that input, I can use my knowledge, etc., and bring about a change. It's very rich in content and form. It's one of the very good ways of learning, project-based learning. Synagogy for team learning. Synagogy is a systematic approach to learning in which the members of small teams learn from one another through structured interactions and non-directive interventions. Challenge and stimulation are created through social situation under which real as well as felt needs for learning can be satisfied. The instructor or learning administrator provides educational materials from which knowledge or insights can be acquired and create designs, instructions for team action that stimulate learning. Reading material is given, anything that you want you can refer to, and then teams are spread out. So one team comes out with some input, some output, second team comes out with another output. Both the outputs are compared, both of them are made to discuss, and through this churning of energies, you'll find a team learning takes place. Facilitation theory. Learners are encouraged to take responsibility of their own learning by providing all necessary inputs and motivation. Keep on facilitating them. Whatever you want, I'm there for you. We follow this facilitation principle of teaching people. Whenever the students are coming, whatever they want, we are willing to give them the inputs. The most valuable learning is a process of self-evaluation leading to reflection and a further course of action. These structured and non-directive interventions are carefully designed to impart to the students managerial perspective in formulating and implementing corporate strategy. What do you mean by managerial perspective? We don't work in isolation, we work in teams, and all the teams are cross-linked in an organization. A synagogue form of learning will help all the teams synergize for the common purpose of the company. It also makes them learn to take decisions to be a comprehensive approach that can be used in the acquisition of knowledge, the examination and change of attitudes, and the development of skills. What do you mean by comprehensive approach? It tells you how we can integrate all these things and come out with a change. Okay. Synagogy differs from other learner-centered methodologies in three basic principles that promote educational success. Synagogy offers meaningful direction to learners in the form of learning designs and learning instruments. Through the process of synagogy, what are in a position to have cross-learning, they get new tools of learning and they can actually implement them as and when it is required. It gives you a variety of things, in short. A learning design is the format that structures the process of learning by providing a framework of orderly steps for acquired knowledge, attitudes, and skills. The design is presented through learning instruments and tactical instructions that enable the learner to learn without a teacher. It's like a do-it-yourself kit, DIY. So the person goes through the learning, he experiments, he goes through orderly steps, etc. Synagogy differs from other learning center method in three basic principles. This is a continuation of that. The second point, synagogy relies on teamwork rather than individual or group work to enhance learners' involvement and participation. While it is well known that members of a group can engage in cross-learning, not every group is necessarily supportive. We are having different groups of teams in companies for different functions. All groups may not be supportive. Some groups are supportive, some are not. The synagogy learning will ensure that the cross-learning takes place through this methodology. A learning team has explicit goals, objectives, tasks, procedures, and measurable operations outcome for its effectiveness. The third principle of synagogy is the process of synergy. The whole can be made more than the sum of its parts. That's how the name comes. As a result, participants achieve greater level of understanding than they otherwise would have. It's based on simple principle. If I do a work alone, I may produce 10 units. If I sit with Vijay and I do a work, he does his work alone, is 10 units. When both of us come together, the principle of synergy says that we'll do more than 10 plus 10, 20, can be 30, even 40. And this is true, provided we follow the principles of this thing which we have discussed. The cross-learning, the cooperation, etc. has to happen. Either it is self-driven or initiated by a facilitator in the beginning, then left alone. Self-directed learning, another lovely form of learning. In this, self-directing learning model proposes that learners advance through stages of increased self-direction and teachers can help their development. You go through the direction, you take your direction, take it ahead. And there will be a facilitator who will be giving you the push when you want it. Good teaching matches the learner stages of self-direction and helps the learner advance through great self-direction. Self-direction learning is itself a context in which learning takes place, a very insightful and powerful one. The learner has a primary responsibility of planning, executing, and evaluating his own learning. Participation in self-directed learning seems almost universal. Means the person has to, self-directed learner has to participate in practically every aspect of what he is learning. Universal. An estimated 90% of the population is involved with at least one self-directed learning activity a year. Most of the people, when they're put into a tight spot, when they do not have anybody to guide them, or they don't feel that they need it, and so they go through the self-directed path. The self-directed path is very, very challenging. At the same time, it gives you great learning, which guided learning may not give you, perhaps. Self-directed learning is characterized by personal autonomy as a personal attribute, self-management as a willingness and capacity to conduct one's own education, learner control as a mode of organizing instructions in a formal setting, and self-teaching as an individual institutional pursuit. Very too many words. In simple terms, it simply means that you have the autonomy and you have the personal initiative to take it ahead with all the challenges. So you have to know what is to be taken in, what sort of resources you need, and take it ahead. Self-directed learning does not follow a definite set of rules or laws. It's not logical. I may do something today, I may reverse it, I may do something else, because I'm finding I've got to go somewhere. Self-directed learning is very, very innovative. In fact, Self-learning occurs both by design and chance, depending upon the interests, experience and actions of individual learners within the circumstances. Self-directed learning does not necessarily mean learning in isolation. In fact, learning happens through friends, experts and acquaintances. You want to go from town A to town B by your car. It's a long journey, 24-hour journey. And you don't have a map, you don't have anybody. You say, come on, let me go. Self-directed learning is more an exploration. So you start going by the road and then you start correcting yourself time and again by asking directions, etc., etc. Okay? It's more exploration. Learning occurs from three sources. Formal learning, schools, universities, defines a sequence of learnings that are socially organized, goal-directed and certified by a diploma or a degree from the public education system. Okay? The rest of it you can read. It's quite wordy, right? Learning occurs from three sources. The second one is informal learning from everyday interactions, defined as a self-directed individual learning from daily experience, learning how to change a tire by observation, learning how to care for one's own children. Okay, transformative learning is one in which the person engages to find a meaning in his life. My role as a trainer is more of transformative learning. It's a more popular form of learning in today's scenario because it does not involve classroom learning and it involves learning a lot about one's own life. One of the best known experts in this area, a scholar named Jack Mezero, began researching on this topic in 1970s. Many transformative training groups are there and also organizations which engage in transformative trainings. And this is one of the most powerful form of training. It makes you go into the very purpose of your existence. And in and through that, you are in a position to see what is a career path you can take, how you can relate to the world, etc., etc., etc. Transformation is usually triggered by a problem and one experiences the pain through the transition. When they find more attractive alternative paths, they are gradually guided to the transformative zone. The end outcome of a transformative learning is characterized by incidents such as break off in a certain relationship that does not fit into the beliefs anymore, or a drastic change in a career or any other social area. Things where you're stuck up, where you find nothing is happening, no progress is going on, there is no meaningfulness, there is no joy, and there is a lot of sorrow, there is a lot of, you know, you're stuck despite all the best of efforts. These are situations where a transformative learning takes a very, very major role. The process may take a long time in some cases. With the help of the facilitator and adequate hand holding, the process may be hastened to effectiveness. It needs a willingness of the trainee to willing to change. Many times people come for transformative learning and they back out because, you know, they feel that it's too much of an effort. They don't mind being with the pain rather than going to a different zone of living life complete. Okay. Transformative learning involves three kinds of reflection. Content reflection. Individuals may reflect on the content or the description of the problem. So what exactly is the issue? The issue is I'm not able to talk to my dad. Content. Process. It involves thinking about the strategies used to solve the problem rather than the content of the problem itself. So how do you think you can talk to your dad? The how part of it. Content is what? Not being able to talk to dad. Process is how are you talking to your dad? What exactly is the why part of it? The process, right? Third one is premise reflection. It leads to the person to question the relevance of the problem itself, the assumptions, beliefs or values underlying the problem. What are the reasons why you're not able to talk to your dad? What approaches are not happening or happening? If the process of reflection leads to an awareness of an invalid perspective, such a perspective can be revised by the individual. No, I feel afraid looking at him. That's an invalid perspective. Then why do you feel afraid of looking at him? So through the question of a dialogue, a very comfortable dialogue, the person is able to understand that there are certain invalid perspectives through which he's stuck up. So you can unlock him and make him feel a little more open to talk to his dad. If the individual acts on a revised belief, then the development can be transformative. So he changes his belief on his own and then things happen. So now coming back to my perspective, author's perspective, this chapter has exposed us to the various theories of learning as practiced in industry for long. These are not the only theories, these are all the theories which have been classically followed for so many years and decades. There are new theories that have come up at the time of writing the book, and even beyond this, you'll come across various new theories that are being put into practice. In the present scenario, after much of deliberations by organizations and HR bodies, a common agreement points towards transformative training as the most effective and long-lasting benefit to most individual and the organization. Today, in my experience, and with the customers, with the corporate clients I have with me, most of the company people are not wanting just a quick fix training. They don't want people to just, you know, go for a training program only for a certain purpose of a conflict management or a team building or something. They want people to change at the transformative level. Because leaders from very good companies have realized a transformative change will bring about a lot of good things for the company and the individual. One of the important things is that when a transformation change happens to you as an individual, you suddenly become a committed person. You start looking at your job from a very different angle. You get job satisfied. You retain yourself in the company. You see the larger picture of the company automatically. In conclusion, I can only tell you one thing, that the leader of a company himself has to be a transformative person. When the founders of the company, the leaders of the company, the promoters of the company, when they have a transformative outlook towards the whole organization and the people inside, then this type of training will make them a very good champion in the industry to which they belong. Hence, although organizations resort to other forms of learning, they are much content when these forms of trainings have a transformative learning as a part. Trainers to that effect also structure the training, keeping in mind the transformative learning of the trainees. And with this, my dear friends, I conclude this module. Thanks a lot for patient listening. All the best.